Dr. Cheryl Silman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me, and as always, I have a fantastic conversation in store for you. If you are listening for the very first time, welcome, and I hope you'll be coming back again and again. If you'd like to get the archive shows of my interviews, then you can either go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, or you can just go over to my website, which is drcherylselman.com. And opt in there, and then I just send them out. So I either post them or send them directly to you, whatever you prefer. But you definitely want to catch every show. And I also want to say that I have a second show on this network called The Love Code. And that show is more of a spiritual show, meaning that I have some wonderful, uplifting guests, spiritual teachers, people who are doing spiritual journeys, people who have had profound experiences. It's really a show to uplift our spirit and open our hearts and tap into the power we have to change, transform, and heal ourselves. So I hope you'll be joining me there as well. Let's get back to What Women Must Know, because we have such a great conversation and an inspirational conversation with my guest. So let me just tell you a little bit about my guest, because we're talking about purpose, passion, and pajamas. And if that hasn't gotten you curious, I don't know what will. So first of all, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about Genevieve Peturo, who is the author of a new book called Purpose, Passion, and Pajamas, How to Transform Your Life, Embrace the Human Connection, and Lead with Meaning. And she was a successful television marketing executive in New York City for 20 years when a little girl's question changed the course of her life forever, and she jumped off the corporate ladder. She began delivering pajamas and books to children in shelters, and in 2001 founded Pajama Program, a nonprofit which has been recognized nationwide for both its success and Genevieve's story. She has been the recipient of many local and national awards. An international speaker, consultant, and author, Genevieve has made it her mission to inspire men and women across the globe to listen to their heart, voice, connection, and pursuing their passions to achieve success. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Genevieve to the show today. Hello, Genevieve.
Hello, Dr. Cheryl.
So I have a question. Are you in your pajamas?
I wish I could wear them every single day.
You know, it's so funny. I have friends that, you know, they every time they can just get into their pajamas, any time of the day if they're home, they'll jump into them. And I'm the exact opposite. It's like as soon as I get up, I got to get dressed, even if I'm not going anywhere. So we all have our favorite ways of living our day. I want to start with you, Genevieve, because you've led such an interesting life, and your passion has definitely opened up so many doors, and it's been a life-changing experience for you and all the people involved. But let's begin with your journey and the story that led you to the purpose that you are now living.
Sure. I was the firstborn four, and my dad off the boat from Italy. My mom was Italian, and they raised us to get an education and to have families of our own. But I didn't go that route. I did the college thing, but I didn't have the ticking clock. I had that independent streak, and I wanted to be Mary Tyler Moore. I wanted to be an independent woman. I wanted success in TV. Really like her. I would watch her every week, and I thought, that is success. She's happy. She's working at a job she loves. She's in a fabulous city. For me, that was New York. She has a great apartment and, you know, fun life, great roommate, and a fabulous wardrobe, didn't she? Oh, my goodness. And to me, that was calling me. All of that was calling me. And so I became a workaholic. I was climbing that corporate ladder. And almost, 15 years of working day and night, all of us colleagues had that same dream. To me, it was the 41st floor. And I was really surprised when one day, when I was 38, I was in my apartment and I heard a voice in me, and it didn't come from my head. You know, we always hear voices in our heads. I heard a ton of them. I didn't, you know, listen to half of them, but I had never heard it come from a different place. And now I call it my heart voice, but it came from inside me. And it was a whisper, but it was clear. And it asked me, if this is the next 30 years of your life, is this enough? And it stopped me cold. And the only thing that was more stunning was my answer, you know, in 5 seconds flat, no, you missed something. You missed having children. And that's the day everything changed.
You know, it's always so fascinating to listen to people's stories, and often there is a defining moment that causes a person to really reevaluate their lives, as you were saying, or to wake up to some other possibility of how they can really contribute in this world. So it's always fascinating to me to hear how we listen to, you call it your heart voice, you can call it your soul, but what a beautiful miracle, what a blessing you received to have heard a message that really changed the direction of your life.
It didn't, and I didn't know any of what you just said for a long time. I didn't know it was coming from a deep place in me. I didn't know that it was inside me. I thought it was outside me. I mean, I didn't have much experience with that, because I was a thinker, I was a doer, and I was moving as fast as I could. And actually, when you slow down, you hear that voice a lot more, and it's a lot clearer. And it's just been an incredible 20 years that started with that shock that spooked me. That voice spooked me.
So you heard this voice that actually asked you a very important question. It's like, what is it all about, Alfi, basically?
Exactly.
And what happened? So what happened after that experience?
Well, when I answered myself, no, you missed having children and a family of your own, I thought, what am I supposed to do now? And I thought, okay, I have my nights after work. I can visit children in shelters. I saw newscasts. I read newspapers. I saw that there were children that were harmed by those who were supposed to be taking care of them. I saw police and social workers bringing them to shelters. I knew what was going on in the news and in my city. So I thought, maybe I can go and read to them. I love to read. So I guess that's why I thought of it. You know, I don't know now how much of it was coming from that same voice and how much of it was coming from my head trying to figure it out. So I called the police and I said, you know, I'm looking to volunteer at some shelters. Can you tell me where you bring the children? And they did give me a few places. And I called and I asked if I could come and read stories to children after work. And it was a different time. It was before 9/11, before things became, you know, really more private and more more security, you know, as it needs to be. But then it was a lot simpler, and they welcomed me. And I literally bought a bunch of children's books that I loved, and I went to a shelter after work. And they brought me into a room that was pretty bare, and they said they'd bring some children in. I looked around, and the rug was tattered, and there were only a couple of chairs, like, too small for me. It was definitely a room where the children were brought in. And I was in my corporate suit, and I sat on the floor. I didn't know what to do. I was so out of my element, and I was also very ashamed that I didn't know what to expect. All I knew were the TV reports. And I'm sitting on the floor in a business suit, like a corporate lady, as I see these little faces appear at the door. And they're walked in, and I can see some of them have been crying, and they were looking around. They were they didn't know where they were. I don't know what had happened to them. Nobody could really tell me. And they saw me on the floor, and they sat down on the floor with me and about a dozen kids. And so I started reading story after story, and it was so quiet. None of them said anything. They looked at me, just empty stares. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what would ease their fears. And I just read story after story. At the end of about 45 minutes, the staff person, you know, walked them back into another room to go to sleep. And I was rocked. I felt some kind of a connection to them. I didn't know why. And again, like looking back, it was because I had stopped. That was the most still I had been in years, sitting on the floor with this quiet group of children that had been through some horrors that I didn't know anything about. And I did that every week, sometimes twice a week with different shelters, until one time I decided when the children were being brought into the other room to go to sleep, that I'd follow and I wanted to see where they were sleeping. And when I looked in, what I saw was an equally bare room, a couple of futons and couches, a couple of children on each, nothing to change into, and lights out. Now, the staff were lovely, but it wasn't what I had. And I was flooded with memories. I'd never thought about bedtime ever. And all of a sudden, like a movie played in my head about my mom and the four of us kids and the laughter and the giggles, and she'd make up stories and pretend that they were written in the books, and we'd catch her in it, and we'd want, you know, something to drink, and we'd want some more cookies and any excuse not to go to sleep, and hugs and tickling, and of course pajamas. And I was looking at these children, and they were just sleeping, going to sleep in the same clothes they'd been wearing, and for how long, I didn't know they were wearing those clothes. And it was all wrong. And I remember they literally had to sort of nudge me to move, to leave. And as they walked me through the door, I turned and I said, "Do you think I could bring pajamas to the children next week?" And even when I said that, I thought, that's like a really trivial question. What are they going to say? And they were so nice. They said, "That would be great. We try to think of everything, but, you know, pajamas would be really great." So all week, I mean, I forgot about my job. I wasn't thinking about anything. I was thinking about nothing but how many of these children are there. And I bought and bought and bought. And I talk about my book going into debt, and it just started that day. I just had to have enough. I couldn't leave anyone out. I didn't know who would be there the next week or the week after, but I just knew if this was the case in one shelter, it must be the case in all the others that I visited. So I bought so many, every size, every design, boys, girls, everything. And I showed up at the next shelter, and I sat on the floor, and I read the stories, and then I told the children I had a special surprise for them. And they stood up, I handed them out, and one little girl, halfway through the line, she came up to about my hip. She had lopsided pigtails, and her clothes were soiled, and her shoes were way too big for her. She refused to take them. She just kept shaking her head no. The more I coaxed her, the more frightened and intimidated she got, and she just kept shaking her head no. But the funny thing was, she didn't want to go into the room to go to sleep. She wanted to watch me. She wanted to stand off to the side and watch me, and so the staff let her, stood with her, and I saw her watching. After I gave to all the kids, I went back over to her, and I knelt down, and I tried to coax her with the warm pair of pink pajamas that I pulled for her because she was wearing purple. And I tried to coax her, and I said, "Honey, these are for you. They're pink, and look, you have pink in your purple shirt, and I know they'll fit you." And I rubbed the soft pajamas on her hand. And I said, "Don't you want your pajamas?" And she whispered to me, "What are they? What are pajamas?" And I somehow kept it together because I was inside, just my insides were upside down. And I managed to explain pajamas to the little girl. And that was the defining moment where I knew nothing would ever be the same.
Mm. Well, what a different world you entered into, which is very courageous to step out of the known and to go into the unknown and to explore another reality that's existing that you knew nothing about.
I didn't know I was doing any of that. I thought I would just show up and read to the children. I didn't know I'd have all these emotions. I didn't know. And I was a caring person, caring family for sure, but I was not prepared for that heart connection that I had with that little girl and all those faces I would see at the door every week.
You know, you said something really profound. I just want to kind of interject. And that was, until you sat on the floor and read those stories the first time, or one of those first times where you actually experienced being still, which is so profound, because to listen to our inner guidance, to our heart, to our intuition, it does require us to be still. And when you're obviously in New York and in television world and executive and the whirlwind life that creates such a busyness, there isn't often a space to be quiet. But it's that space when you're quiet that you receive your guidance in life.
I couldn't agree more, and I had to learn all of that.
So what happened then?
I couldn't think of anything but all these children, wherever they might be, all the little boys and all the little girls. And I started telling people, I just started telling them the story. Please listen, you've got to help me, because you wouldn't believe it. She asked me, what are pajamas? This little girl, that she didn't know what pajamas are, and I had to tell her what pajamas are. And there are so many of them like her. And every time I told that story and I looked at whoever I was telling the story to, I could tell that it was like they were there. It was as if they were the one standing in front of her. They got it. And I was amazed at how they felt the same way I felt. It was like her connection to me and my connection to them and their connection to her. It was all the same. It was like one electrical volt going from one to the other to the other. And they felt it. And over time, I realized it's because we all have that hole in us, that fear we have that we're alone sometimes. We're afraid sometimes. We don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. How many of us toss and turn? I know I do at night when I'm afraid of something, when I've had a bad day. These kids have it every day, every night. And they've been through horrors that we couldn't even imagine, and I've learned over the last 20 years. And the idea that my mom gave me pajamas, yes, she read me a story, yes, but what she really gave me and what all parents, grandparents, siblings give their children, what we all feel is the love and that comfort and that security and the safety and that knowing that that person is there for us and sees us and cares about us and will be there in the morning, even if we have a bad day. That's our saving grace, that there's somebody that cares that much about us, and we take it for granted. I did. And that's what bedtime gives us, that foundation, knowing that there's that bond. And when I looked into that bedroom and I didn't see pajamas, that's what's all wrapped up in pajamas. It's not about the material. It's not about the pajamas. And I learned through every reaction, through things that happened that brought the human connection to stand right there by her side, and every child like her, that it's in all of us to feel that compassion and that empathy, because it's in all of us, whether we want to admit it or not. And of course, I never thought I had that until I felt that deep connection to her. And I started to feel her pain.
What a profound moment in your life, because it changed everything.
It changed everything, you know, and I just wanted it to change for the children, but it changed me, but it changed so many people who connected to each other and who met through each other. And it's one simple act, it's one simple idea that brought so many people together, and strangers, you know, a small article was written in a national magazine, and the outpouring, the packages and letters that came to my door from strangers who felt the same thing, and in a written article, they felt the same thing, that bedtime of pajamas meant much more than just an article of clothing, and they knew it. And then parents would tell me, you know, I want to help because, and I'd hear stories. One woman told me that her husband had been very ill for a very long time, and she tried to make up for what a dad could do for their three children, take them to baseball games and practices and things that a dad would normally do. And she thought she was carrying the ball for both of them. Everything seemed fine every day. The kids seemed happy, and she thought she was doing a great job. And then her youngest was like 7 or 8, and she was tucking him in. And before she left the room, he called her back to his bedside. And she went back, and she sat down again, and she said, "What is it, honey?" And she said it took him a while until he finally said, "Mom, do you think I could end up like that?" And she said it broke her heart. Here's her little boy feeling safe enough to confide in her at bedtime, his deepest fear. And she said, "And that's why I get it." And the stories like that just weren't ending. And once a man called, and he started just throwing questions at me. "Why are you doing this? Where are you getting the pajamas? Where are you bringing them? What do you think it's going to accomplish?" And I answered all those questions. And then I said, "Can I ask why you're asking me?" And he said, "Well, if you think you're making a difference, I'll tell you, you are." He said, "I was a little boy. I grew up in an orphanage. And that was my worst time, bedtime. I cried myself to sleep wondering where was my mommy." And he said, "It is the scariest, loneliest time for a child in an orphanage. And you're giving them care and comfort, and I want you to know they will feel it. They will know when that package comes, when somebody drops it off, if they're lucky enough to hear a bedtime story, it makes a difference." And there's just so many stories and so many people that I never met that taught me all the reasons why it's not about the pajamas.
So the career kind of took...
I'm surprised I didn't get fired. Yeah, my heart wasn't in it, so to speak. No more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went from full-time to taking some projects, and then, you know, the universe has a way of helping, you know, when you are on your purpose and you need help, it's there. And it brought me a wonderful man. You know, I'd been so busy climbing the corporate ladder, I did not have time to get married and have kids. And I met a wonderful man, and I thought, gee, I better tell him I'm thinking about jumping here off the corporate ladder, because he thinks this might be a two-income family. And until I could figure out if, you know, I can get some grants, I'm going to wing it. And when I told him, I was cringing, waiting for his response, and he said, "Go for it." So from that moment on, he drove me places, he listened to me, and he teaches meditation. So he taught me that what I felt, that stillness, was where the answers were.
So I have a question. When you were in this transition time, did the job just seem less and less meaningful to you, or you had less ambition for it? What happened as you were switching, this is my language, Genevieve, switching frequencies, right?
That's a good language. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a way that, you know, resonates for me. I like that word because you did, it's like your frequency totally changed from this momentum of purpose from the career. So did you find that it no longer attracted you, no longer brought you any joy?
Delicately. Yes, Dr. Cheryl, that's putting it delicately. I became obsessed with the children and getting the pajamas. And I started making mistakes. I was embarrassed at the job because I wasn't there. My mind wasn't there. My heart certainly hadn't been there since I met those children. And I would get to the office 5 a.m., the crack of dawn, and lug in the pajamas, boxes, my needs pajamas folder, and I would just use that time before anybody else came in to do what was important to me. And then I would just sort of slide through the day doing what I had to do. But I had a cell phone attached to me, which in those days, you know, the beginning, 20, 23 years ago when I started this on the side, you know, you weren't supposed to have a phone, but I did. And that was the most important thing to me, that phone. If that phone rang, somebody had pajamas to give me or somebody needed pajamas. So, you know, I didn't care about the phone on the desk. I cared about the phone on my hip that I was concealing. And it got to a point where I almost got fired and I had to just pull out of the corporate world and take on just projects because it wasn't fair. I wasn't doing my work. I was a different person. And I was obsessed with these children in the pajamas.
And that's, you know, so powerful, Genevieve, because when you're ignited to your purpose, that's the only thing that you really want to do. And that's the only thing that really seems to have true meaning in one's life when you have that, you've made that connection, which obviously you did. you stumbled upon it or however it happened,
stumble.
Guided to it, whatever it was. But, you know, obviously your passion was ignited for this work.
It was, and I was not expecting it. You know, I thought finding your purpose was for, you know, Einstein and Deepak Chopra and Oprah and, you know, other people who did incredible things. I didn't know that it was for the ordinary person like me, and it's for every single one of us.
So you didn't know Mary Tyler Moore had a secret side to her that, that had a purpose and passion going.
I am sure she did, and I'm sure she, acting was part of that.
So, tell us about your organization, because out of this passion that you had, you've created a whole new direction in life, a whole new career, or a whole new contribution for the past 20-something years. So tell us about your nonprofit.
Well, you know, the same way I heard that heart voice the first time, and then I was just doing this on, you know, on my own time, and it met the man that I married, I would say to him, what is this pajama thing? What am I supposed to do with this? You know, I'm walking around handing out pajamas. You're driving me places. I'm going in. I'm reading for an hour. I come downstairs, get in the car, and you drive me home. What is this thing? And he said, you have to be still, and you have to ask. Ask your heart. The same way you heard the first message, the first question, you will hear it, but you have to keep asking. You have to ask. And so I was asking everywhere. I was going to work. I was asking in the train. I was asking on the sidewalks of Manhattan. I was asking at my desk, what is this? What is this thing? Am I supposed to do this thing? And I was on the subway going to a meeting for work, and on a busy subway in New York City, it felt like a raindrop plopped onto my head. And a plop of water was a little like a bubble, like you write in, as a kid, bubble letters. And I heard and I saw pajama program. those two words. And it plopped, pajama program, plopped into my brain, and I saw it in little, in bubble letters. And I knew it. I knew it. I said, that's what it's called. It's a real thing. And I got out at the wrong stop, and I ran to a payphone, which they had. And I called my husband, and I said, I got it. He said, what'd you get? I said, pajama program. He said, okay, you know what to do? And I said, yep. And that was a half truth because I didn't know what to do. I knew it was something. I knew it was it, but I didn't know what to do. But I was so excited, and I just trusted that I would step by step figure it out. So it had a name. And then when a little article came out in the magazine, somebody had called and said, are you the lady handing out pajamas in Harlem? I said, yeah, I guess that's me. So she said, I'm going to write a little article. And she wrote a little article. And the thousands and thousands of boxes and pajamas and letters and packages and dollar bills that came to my apartment, and my husband and I had just been married or engaged. I think we were married. And he said, what is this? And we didn't know because the magazine hit the subscribers before it went on to the newsstands. And we opened and we laughed and we cried and we couldn't even see each other through the boxes, above the boxes. And there were letters and people were saying, please, can you give these pajamas to another one of those children? Please, can you buy a pair of pajamas with this money? It's all I have. We were so emotional. And one of the letters said, can you please send us your 501c3 so we can give you a grant? And I looked at my husband and I said, what is this thing, 501c3? I didn't even know what it meant to start a legitimate nonprofit. And I looked at the boxes and I said to him, this is real. And these people are trusting me. And I have a responsibility. So I better find out what this 501c3 is and I better get it. And that was the beginning of starting a nonprofit that I had no experience. I knew nothing about. I had volunteered a little here and there. I had written a couple of little checks. But I didn't know what I was in store for. But one step at a time, asking a lot of people for favors, asking a lot of people for free, to do things for free, asking a lot of people embarrassing questions. And I got the 501c3, and it was 2001. So next year will be officially 20 years. And then I, you know, a couple of years before that, it was just me and my husband driving around and giving out pajamas and shelters. So it's been incredible. We've come to now 63 chapters around the country, 7 million new pajamas and new books to children in the U.S. and Puerto Rico, and some abroad, and the tens of thousands of people who have connected, all those people who read or heard my story, because I will, especially in the beginning, we didn't have social media. I had to tell people. It was hard to not grab them and say, do you hear me? These children need pajamas. What can you do? But it's a good thing I didn't have to do that too often, because they did feel it and they did, you know, help in any way they could. And so it's changed so many lives. And first and foremost, those children who I pray every night, feel the love, feel our love.
How inspirational, Genevieve, because here you are, climbing the corporate ladder. You had a moment when something broke through and you made a decision to, visit a shelter, which was, again, out of your comfort zone, didn't quite know what you were doing. And out of that, not only did you create this amazing organization, this nonprofit, and how everything came to you, as I'm listening to your story, it just reaffirms that when you are on your purpose, things come. You don't have to know how you're going to start a 501c nonprofit. You don't know how you're going to get the money, right, to fund this. You don't know this logically, but when you are on your purpose, things just get attracted. You literally are attracting these energies into your life that are showing you the way. So to me, that's so important, because often people stop because they don't know how it could possibly happen, their vision or their project. They don't know how it could happen, so we stop. We don't pursue it. But what I hear you saying is, when you are on purpose, things just opened up, doors opened up, possibilities opened up that you didn't even know existed beforehand.
It's true, and it's not something your head understands, you know, and there's so many lessons. That's why I wrote the book. There are so many lessons that I can share that I had no idea I would know 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Just like what you said, Dr. Cheryl, things move, you know, and I always have that commitment quote on my desk. Things move when you make a decision, when you are determined and committed, when you're on purpose. Things move in mysterious ways, and the universe is your partner. And things happen that, you know, spook you, but in the nick of time. Now, it's not perfect, and I'm not saying that there aren't scary days. I have lost thousands of nights sleep. I have cried myself to sleep. I have been so afraid that, you know, I would be penniless. I was so afraid that I would be one more person who just disappointed these children, like a whole list of them, of other adults had in their lives. And I thought, maybe this doesn't mean anything. They need food. They need a shelter. They need a new home. You know, what good is a pair of pajamas? I would get down on myself. I didn't understand. Never thought it was enough. And the truth is, it is. All of us doing something links us to offer something better, some hope to somebody who needs that. And you never know what's going to touch somebody and what's going to change a life. And you do have to trust the universe. And I tell people, if I had thought about it, I would have scared myself right out of it. And that's what we do. Just like you said, we think about it, we see all the mountains, and we talk ourselves right out of it.
So, well, one question I have you actually met any of these kids, like from 15, 20 years ago that you gave pajamas to, and have you reconnected with any of them to hear their
stories?
Yes,
there is one. There's the little girl that asked me at the beginning, what are pajamas? I don't know where she went. So early on, I didn't know I should be keeping notes, and I regret it. It was an emergency shelter, but it could have been one of a few, and I'm not sure a lot of those children were in and out. They were processed, and then the judges took over. I have no idea what happened to her. I have a sketch that my niece drew from my description just a few years ago that I wanted to have forever. But there is a little girl, and I have a picture of visiting her and giving her pajamas, and she's holding them up when she was 2 years old. And a few years ago, when Pajama Program celebrated 15 years, I invited her, and she was there, and she was 17, going to college, and she spoke to our group, and she told them how she remembered being little and getting pajamas every so often when I'd show up, and then how when we started reading to children at our reading centers that we opened, of course, her group came, and she remembered that, and she said she loves to read, and she had such beautiful things to say about the time she spent with us and her love for reading and school and now going to college, and she's a beautiful young lady, and that is enough for me, knowing that there is one out there and praying that there are more, but that it did make a difference to one.
And what a beautiful acknowledgement and validation of everything that you committed yourself to do, to have that little two-year-old who was so profoundly impacted by your caring and generosity, and to actually see those ripples that go on behind us that we don't often recognize as the impact they're having, to have that opportunity to hear from her about how you made such a difference in her life.
It was incredible. It was just so special. And, you know, I have that picture and I look at it and it's just so amazing. And there's so many people in corporations. You know, she was holding coincidentally a pair of pajamas I gave her from Carter's, and they became a sponsor several years later. And the CEO was there when she spoke, and we showed that picture up on the screen. And it's just, you never know what your company, what you personally, what your affiliation, what your family or friends do that is going to just come to you, you know, like a rush and like an amazing life experience that you could never imagine would come full circle, however many years later, you know. And Carter's is just one, you know, Scholastic's, Target, so many companies and so many individuals who year after year follow what we're doing and see themselves and see what they've done to make a difference.
And those are the experiences that really show us the best of humanity, of who we really are as a truly compassionate, caring species, if given half the chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to show that now. We need to use that human connection to the fullest, you know. And I say it's not the power of one. That little girl had so much power to unite us. And people say, oh, the power of one, you had an idea. No, it's the power of one another that moves mountains and moves people. That's my experience. That's all I did was tell the story. And all she did was look me in the eyes and just penetrate my heart.
So if people want to know more about your nonprofit, about getting involved, about contributing, what would you suggest?
They can go to pajamaprogram.org or go to my site, GenevievePeturo.com, and reach out to me and tell me what you're thinking. You know, I'd be happy to brainstorm with anybody or offer all of my mistakes up front on a silver platter. So a lot of people just
or they can find out where if they have a branch in their
yes, absolutely,
community.
Yes, on pajamaprogram.org they can go to chapters, yes, and they can find that out. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, good. So that's great. Pajamaprogram.org is an easy site to remember if people want to learn more or contribute or donate. I guess it's all there. So they can participate in whatever way if they're so moved to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about your book that you've written, Purpose, Passion, and Pajamas.
Right. Well, I realized all these things I've learned are so simple, and we need to be reminded of so many simple things these days. So I wanted to write this book, and I wanted to keep speaking, because speaking was what I felt shared the story the best. And so I was doing that. So I asked the board if I could be replaced as executive director, because I wanted to form this entity to speak and to write, to help others who are looking for their purpose, whether they want to make a jump off the corporate ladder or slide something in, but they needed to fill their heart with whatever was nagging them to do with. So we hired a terrific executive director a few years ago, and I am founder, so I'm speaking and wrote this book to share what happens when you listen to your heart, all the things that fall in place and all the things that don't. And all the mistakes I made and all the things that I'd never shared. And it's, you know, I got into debt and I didn't know what I was doing. And I had to figure out things that, you know, I was embarrassed to ask about. So many things that just are the subtitle, how to transform yourself. I'm a different person. The people in my life are different. how to embrace the human connection. You know, it's a heart connection. It's not the head. Yes, you work with people and you use your head, but that's not the connection. The connection comes from your heart, the human connection. And lead with meaning. How different it is when you are working with people for the greater good. When you figure out, for me, it wasn't until I was 38. Some people are, I'm so jealous. They think of, you know, they're in their 20s looking for a job with meaning. I wish I had. I wish I knew that was what was the right thing to do, what we were supposed to do all along. And how to lead with meaning and how it changes everything. It changes you. It changes the people in your life. Everybody feels it. And there's a camaraderie. There's a corporate culture when even at work, if you have meaning and the leadership has meaning and it lets you in on that and embraces you, it changes everything. It changes all the relationships at work and your relationships at home. It's just an incredible transformation. And I know people are hungry for it, especially now. And even if it's not easy, it's absolutely possible. If I could do it, anybody can.
So you kind of changed direction again because by giving up your position as the executive director and taking on speaking and writing, you're now focused on inspiring others to move on to their purpose and passion in life and encouraging them.
Well, I can listen. I can brainstorm. I can tell them everything that I went through. I can provide shortcuts, whatever I can that I've learned in 20 years. If it helps or inspires somebody to take a chance, I'm in.
And how do you do that, Genevieve? I mean, is it a specific program that you're offering, or do people contact you directly? If someone wants to be supported or guided or counseled, how they can make that leap and how they can fulfill their vision and mission and dreams, what would they do to begin the journey of learning what it takes to make it happen?
Well, I do various things. I do one-on-one, so I can sit or chat with somebody about a project once or on an ongoing basis, whatever they need. I teach master classes to groups. I did 10 so far. I've done 10 through this quarantine because I was speaking in person, and, of course, that stopped. So I put together 10 one-hour master classes, which are on my website, on everything from listening to your heart voice to making a vision board to finding meaning at work right after the quarantine. So people going back to work are going back, and they've spent this time going inward. I mean, there's no way out of that. We all started looking and examining our lives, right? So going back to work, because you need the job, and if you have the job, you still want meaning there. That's new. Maybe you never thought about it before, but you're thinking about it now. And so those master classes are for groups who together want to find meaning at work, or who want to learn how to make a vision board, or who want to learn how to inspire and empower their teams, some leadership master classes. So those are for groups, and I offer those. And I'm always speaking about those topics in my book and in the subheading to any group that just wants a presentation on some of the topics I talk about in my book. And after every chapter, I have a few heart-of-the-matter takeaways. And it's the life lessons I learned that pertain to the chapter that came before. So there are lots of heart-of-the-matter takeaways that I put in there that just get right down to what's important.
Must have been an interesting experience writing your book and having to review your life and the journey that you were on and the lessons that you've learned along the way.
It's very cleansing. It's very difficult, especially if you're reliving sad times with some of the experiences, with the children. You know, I traveled and I saw shelters and I'd see children coming in. You know, in Colorado, one of the children came in with blood on his shirt from a fight between his parents, and obviously there was bloodshed, and he was crying. And it, I mean, I can't tell you the number of times anyone, and certainly I, wanted to scoop him up and put him under my coat and run away. And you can't do that, and you have to be effective, and the only way you can be effective is to understand the situation and make plans to give as much as you can in a small way, a small niche, and make a difference. And it was hard to go back through some of those stories that I wrote in the book, and it was hard to know that these children have been through this and some didn't come through it very well. It's hard to know that adults can do what they do to children. It's exhilarating to relive all the moments when people came through in extraordinary ways and when people were moved. You run the gamut, and you know, I wasn't prepared for that onslaught of emotion either, but to see it written down in chronological order, which is also hard because you have to remember which came first. You have to really go back and just try to remember all the events, but you're outlining 20 years. I outline 20 years, and people do it for their whole lives. And to see it on paper, you know you've lived a life when you can put it on paper. And when I read other people's memoirs and things, I'm in awe that they had the patience, and it does take patience, and it is hard work. But it's a cleansing in the end.
Yes, you're birthing something very profound when you put it all together and find it's completed and you see your work print. You know, it's certainly like you're giving birth to something very, very creative expression that's very profound. So in the last few minutes we have, is there anything you want to share that we haven't had a chance to chat about?
You know, the one thing I'd say, Dr. Cheryl, is right now we're all going through this extraordinary time, and I think we've all had our dreams, and in better days, we've all said, oh, I'm going to do that. I really want to, you know, work with animals, and I really want to help seniors. And we all were working toward the day, I think, when we could do that, whether it's a jump or, I say, a slide to bring it into your life in your own time if you have to work 9 to 5 for a paycheck. And I just hope that now, since we're in this state and peace of mind is number one, having money to buy food and have a roof over your head, your family's head, that is number one. And I think everyone's dreams go further on a further back burner. And I understand that. And I just encourage people to still look at that dream and bring even an hour of that dream into your life a week. Because if you banish it farther away, it's harder to feel hope. It's harder to feel excited about things. But if you bring in that dream or that hobby or whatever it is that makes your heart sing, even a little in your life, especially now, whether you're looking for a job, you don't have that job anymore, as difficult as it is, it will give you hope. It will give you energy. It will make a flicker of excitement back to you. And it's like you're telling yourself, I didn't forget. I didn't forget about that. And that will make a difference to get us through this time.
Well, those are great words of wisdom, and especially because it is a time when we are forced to be quiet and spend more time going within. So it connects us to a deeper place. At least we have the possibility of making a connection by allowing more quietness into ourselves. And I've seen that happen with a lot of my friends. I've seen lots of changes go on because they've stilled themselves rather than running in a frantic pace. So I trust there's a greater purpose to this time when we are, in a sense, in a reset for our own personal lives. So let me just remind people, if they want to know more about your program, that they should go to pajamaprogram.org. And if people want to know more about you, Genevieve, and your master classes and your counseling and the lectures you're doing and whatever new Zoom programs you're creating, they can go to your personal website. And I just want to make sure people know how to spell your name, because it's Genevieve and Pituro, P-I-T-U-R-R-O.com. So it's GenevievePituro.com. And it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. You're such an inspiration, Genevieve. And I know that there's just wonderful things in store for you, and you are spreading the message of the heart and of purpose. And again, people can pick up your book, Purpose, Passion, and Pajamas, How to Transform Your Life, Embrace the Human Connection, and Lead with Meaning. So wishing you all the best, Genevieve, with all the wonderful work that you're doing. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Cheryl, and thanks to everybody who listens.
And to all of you who are listening, thank you for joining me for another wonderful, uplifting, transforming conversation. And until next week, fill your week with love, peace, and happiness. Bye for now.